know where am I headed? I am certain. All I know is I am on my way.
Welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFillon.
Hello.
Well, what a bumper week it's been. Champions League came back, FA Cup weekend. All that's gone on since we last got together in this tiny, tiny studio in my house and talked football last.
It's still going on now with the...
It is still going on right now. Right now, Theo Walcott has just put Arsenal 2-0 up. This is obviously a result that you know what happened. So I'm feeling quite confident at the moment that Arsenal are just going to cruise through for the last half an hour or so.
Yep, you're just going to shut the doors and assume everything goes.
I'm going to shut the door and assume that everything goes according to plan. But obviously, listeners could know what's happened and you could be having a really good chuckle to yourself right now, couldn't you?
They knew nothing back then, 3 years ago, didn't they? They knew nothing.
So if we do get distracted, it's because football's on the telly and we get distracted by football, don't we?
Because
watching football is actually better than talking about it, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. It's in three stages, isn't it?
Yep.
Playing football, watching football, talking about football.
Yeah.
No? There are three stages, but I'm not sure that's the order. All of the time.
All of the time.
I think you could shuffle those up.
You could shuffle those up?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's a controversial opinion.
That is
a
controversial
opinion.
But
then again, that's what we like on this podcast, isn't it?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
We don't
court controversy too much. But Jan, you came across a story that seemed quite controversial today.
Mm.
And got on the WhatsApp in our little group and said, hey, I think we should talk about this tonight. And we were all in agreement that half an hour is something we could certainly talk about this story.
Alan Nixon wrote a brief piece in the Sun on Sunday. It basically suggested that Sunderland were looking at relocating their training facilities from the Academy of Light to somewhere just outside of London. In fact, I think that he even cited that they were looking at QPR's training ground, which I think soon to be or has already been vacated. Initial thoughts on that were, oh my God, the horror! How can we do that? But I suppose we're here to spend the next 20-odd minutes talking about why that might not be the end of days.
In the 24 hours since that was released, there hasn't been any backup to it, has there? There's been a few denials from anyone who was mentioned in the article. If anyone was mentioned, I don't know.
No, they weren't.
It was just a club, wasn't it?
Yeah,
really?
There was no sources referred to at all.
Yeah.
I mean, all the local press, we'll say the biggest newspapers up there, which are the Newcastle Evening Chronicle and the Sunderland Echo, both came out with pieces almost straight away.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if the club kind of...
Yeah.
Well, they did their best to shut it down. And of course, we don't even know if they've had this conversation. I would imagine it might have been something that someone's spoken about at some point in the boardroom, but I don't think they were just doing a control leak to see what people thought of it.
So, because it's quite an important thing, isn't it? You'd imagine, wouldn't you, Terry? So, yeah. I mean, we're no strangers to fake news, are we?
No.
In football.
No,
I mean, like the world is just waking up to it, but the world of football has thrived on fake news for years, isn't
it? That's true, yeah.
Especially with transfer. But it's usually just transfers, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, nothing is really worrying about that. And usually it's cooked up by agents with a friendly ear to a journalist.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Who can say, well, look, here's 200 words you can fill up a column with.
Sometimes it's just to, you know, help grist the mill, so to speak. Maybe try and see if you can, you know, move a transfer along by releasing it to the press or talking to someone in the press to see if you can, you know, oil the wheels, so to speak.
Mm. And, of course, now it's spread out to the real world now, isn't it?
So
now everyone's doing it, aren't they?
Absolutely, everyone's doing it.
And people are dying in Sweden because of it.
I know, it's
terrible. I'd heard that.
That's terrible.
Can you believe that?
I couldn't believe it.
I couldn't believe it.
So sad.
I still can't believe it.
Yeah.
So sad.
Well, this is the danger of fake news.
Yeah, fake news in the real world.
Yeah, fake news in the real world is that fake people die.
But is this story fake?
I don't know. We don't know. That's the thing about it. I mean, it's not like something that we can actually, like, just look, look, it's still here. Well, what is the genesis of all stories like this? It's someone's whispered something or someone's told something that has been misunderstood or, Chinese whispers happen, don't they? Sorry, Yan, I'm like I just meant that in the figurative sense, you know.
Yeah, we meant no offence.
Yeah.
It's...
things get lost in translation, don't they? And there's communication things, and I'm really digging myself in a hole here, aren't I?
Stop digging. Yeah, or dig up instead. Dig up, stupid.
And so these stories come about, and I suppose really, I mean, like if you're in a newspaper, if it's an unnamed source, you can really put anything like that because you're not really harming anyone.
No. Not really. Well, no, I mean, you know, but possibly the local economy of wherever Sunderland's academy is currently situated.
Well, that's another thing, isn't it? Because if you're being on the cynical side of sceptical, you can start to read things into it. Like, say, well, is this a supplied story? Is this something that, because, I don't know, somehow they've fallen out with the local authority or something like that, they're not getting some kind of nice treatment from people who are in local government?
I mean, it's possible. One thing that makes it, I mean, there's a number of things that make it unlikely, but it's of late... the players and the club have been really putting themselves out there in the community. I think there's a feeling amongst the hierarchy at Sunderland, the ever-changing hierarchy at Sunderland, because they are changing the way it's all structured, I think, in anticipation of a relegation and then a rebuilding from there. But nevertheless, they've been going out into the community. The players all got taken around the Nissan plant in Washington just to show them, you know, this is what ordinary people do with their days. Of course, there's been stuff they've been doing with all hospitals and stuff like that. And
yeah, I saw some of that on the social media.
Yeah, and they had an open training session today at the Stadium of Light, and they got a few thousand people in there for that as well. So I think they're doing everything
they can.
So what
day for that to actually happen?
Well, yeah.
So on a day when they have this open day at their training facilities there, and then to be told that they're moving out of there or something like that.
Yeah. So. Well, the training was actually at the Stadium of Light, but you're absolutely right, though. I mean, it's still part of the same kind of structure. And as well as that, there was a lot made of the Academy of Light being, you know, world-class training facilities. And they built that in the hope that top players that we were trying to sign would see it and go, well, you know, this actually is a serious club. You know, they've got some good facilities. I think I'll be all right here.
So if we take away the actual, well, if this story is legitimate or not...
Mm.
How about if we just talk about the concept then? The concept, the idea of a club moving its back operations or its training operations from...
Sorry.
He just hit the bar.
As you turned away, he fired off the shot and it rammed off the bar. And we were both... Oh! And you just turned away as he hit it.
Sorry, mate.
Sorry.
Right. Okay. So... What about the concept of it? Could it actually work, or does a club need to be ingrained with the local community? Does it have to be going down the same supermarkets, parking in the disabled spots? Does it have to be in that area?
Not if it wants to be a football club. No, if it wants to be a business.
Yeah.
That is in the business of being a football team. So having a stadium with players and, you know, supporters and customers coming through, then it would be like a cinema chain. And you have a headquarters where you have all the people who run the cinemas are, and then you have the cinemas.
Mm.
I mean, you could do it that way. Leipzig arguably is based in Salzburg, or Leipzig is kind of based maybe in Leipzig. And then Red Bull Salzburg is based in Salzburg. There's a flow of traffic of players coming from Salzburg. It is not out of the question that Red Bull could find a site somewhere in Middle Europe and build a centre of excellence where all of the players for all of the Red Bull teams go to play and then conceivably are actually based there, particularly the ones relatively local. And then they just commute into... Yeah, the stadium to work. So it's not out of the question, but it's not a football club.
Well, the concept of
feeder
clubs has been around for a while, isn't it? And it usually courts controversy, doesn't it, really? Because you've got this idea of a club in a foreign country, like maybe Belgium or something like that, that is producing talent solely for your club or supposedly for your club. So, but they're growing up in a different environment. and training in different methods. So that's something, but that's not actually like moving your whole training, is it? It's taking that one step
it would
further,
have to be there, yes. Yeah. I mean, the example I'm giving would be what I've just said, Red Bull saying, right, we're going to have a training complex here in this city, and it's going to serve the players and coaching staff for both Red Bull, Salzburg and Leipzig.
Yeah.
So they'll be based here, and then we will bus them to the stadiums, you know, for match days.
Mm. Yeah.
Which I think is presumably the idea of the scheme for Sunderland, is that, and I'm assuming that the purposes of it is it's easier to attract players to come to London than it is to come to the North East.
Yeah. Mm.
At least I think that's the thinking behind it.
Yeah. I mean, back in 1999, I was organising my 30th birthday party. I hired out this place. It was actually a moored boat on the river. Mm-hmm. It was run by a Colombian. They had a nice little setup there. I thought, hey, this will be all right. And we'll be down there. We'd done the business. We'd sorted it all out, booked the dates and everything. And they would say, oh, all right, come and have a drink. Oh, we'll have, and have some food. You know, this is the food we're doing. They thought, oh, this is great. And there was a guy in the back of the bar. There was hardly anybody there that night. And a guy in a full white shell suit. And I thought, oh, God, I know it. I recognise him. I recognise that guy. And and they said, oh, yeah, that's Hamilton Rickard. The Borough player.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, right, okay. Oh, has he just come down here for a like, special occasion or anything? And he said, no, he's down here most nights. And and basically, he was just training up in Middlesbrough every day, and then after training he'd be heading down to London every day just so he could hang around with other Colombians. We got introduced, but he couldn't speak any English, and so it was, I mean, I could see it back then because there wasn't so many foreign players in the Premier League. I mean, you see it now that there's a lot of camaraderie between a lot of the foreign players. Either they played at old clubs or they play international, or just because they share a common background. And so you see that a lot in the tunnels, don't you? When you see the players introducing themselves to each other or just like patting each other on the back and everything. But I wonder if that had changed, that's changed that much, whether or not there are still players out there who are in the northeast or in other corners of the country that still think, I'm going to head down to London because I've got no one here.
Yeah, you like to think that these days they make more of an effort to integrate the players into their local communities, but it's not, I mean, I don't know for certain that would actually happen.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back only a few years ago when we got Roy Keane to become our manager, no, it didn't necessarily end well, compared to some of our managers leaving the manner they have in the last few years, actually it ended in a very traditional way. He commuted up for a day or a couple of days at a time from his home in Cheshire.
Yeah.
And that was a big part of the falling out, I think, is the view was that, you know, if you're not living
here, he wasn't committed to it. Yeah.
Committed to it. I don't know how true that is. I think it'd be difficult for a player. I think that in that example, that's a bit of a strange one because he's on his own.
Yeah.
So he's doing his thing with his teammates.
Yeah.
And then stepping out of that.
Yeah.
So it's not like he can have dinner with them or get a, you know, make friends there or anything like that. He's kind of heading back down. But I think that for a whole squad to be based away from where the team that they're playing for, you know, naturally play. When I was reading that, I mean, I didn't think it for a second really it was going to come about, but I thought that, you know, it's not really the end of the world. If you want to attract the best players, then why not? Sometimes you have to think a bit more radically. And I think that if Sunderland are going to survive, or if any North East club, maybe Newcastle less so, I think they can still attract some good quality talent, and they probably will do when they come back up. But I think with Sunderland and Middlesbrough, they're going to struggle to do that. And I think this is just a reaction to the fact that geographically it's not the greatest place to live. It's a bit cold, and it's not Tunbridge Wells, and we're going to struggle to get some of the best players. And if you, one of the things that's always cited is that Sunderland have recruited very, very poorly over the years, and it could be. And even Moyes has said this recently, you know, we can only attract a certain type of player, a certain level of player, somebody who wants to take a step into the Premier League, but can't necessarily get to play for someone like Arsenal.
It's not like they're going to be bussing them up, is it? It's not like they're going to stick him on a coach from London all the way up to Sunderland at, like, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning.
No.
You know, on, they can on the stretch Saturday. They'll plane, take a plane, they'll charter a plane. I mean, and also if it's at QPR, QPR's ground, then they're presumably pretty close to Heathrow.
Yeah.
So they'll be able to take it in, they'll probably be able to charter an internal flight, they'll probably be able to do a deal with a firm, with an airline, to take them up there and back, and do so, you know, within a few hours, and they'll be there. And I would imagine that they'll probably fly them up the day before.
Yeah.
But it does lead you to the whole idea of what home advantage is, and what is the nature of home advantage, because obviously home advantage is you play in the stadium with which you are comfortable and familiar, and you know well, and the fans all know you as well. But is there something more to it than that? Is it also, you know, that sense that you're in a place, you're in a community, you're not far from where you live, it's easy to get to? You know, when you play in your home ground, you know, it's not just those the confines and the environment that's familiar to you and brings you comfort and confidence, and in fact can work in the opposite direction if you're playing badly. But it's also the fact that you're only probably maybe about an hour's drive from where you live. You know, and the fact that you'll be home, you know, in good time after the game, or out with your mates or whatever it is that you do.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's a bit of an old-fashioned way of looking at things. But wouldn't that be missing if you were basically being, not busting, but if you were flying up, staying at a hotel, you know, and essentially, and for, you know, obviously for some of the older players, they'd be very familiar with the area. But the new signings, you know, it would be almost like going to an away match every day, every week.
Would you
wonder?
I suppose the narrative will be that this is just the final cut, isn't it, between a team and the locality, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's been a growing thing for years now, is the fact that you don't get local boys playing for the club much anymore.
No.
I don't know if it's really been that. I know for Arsenal there have been quite a few Essex boys that have come through.
Yeah.
But yeah, not so much now. Now they're more like they come from France than they are from Essex.
Mm.
And I don't know if there's any sort of local talent that's coming through from Sunderland. When was the last time a local boy made it through?
Well, Jordan Pickford most recently. But I mean, he's one player. Probably Jordan Henderson before that. Anybody of notable talent? You know, forgive me if I've forgotten anyone there. But yeah, we don't bring too many young players through.
Yeah, and if they're really good, then like Jordan Henderson,
they get snapped up.
They get snapped up, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah, and they're talking about that with Pickford now. I think Arsenal, another story from the newspaper saying that Arsenal are interested in buying him for £30 odd million, which is crazy, considering he wasn't playing first team football at the beginning of the season, really. So
yeah,
mad.
I suppose in the '90s there were players coming through like Gerrard at Liverpool. The Nevilles at Man U as well, like local lads who have grown up in the local environments, playing for their club, getting to the top level and staying at their clubs for years and years and years.
Although you do get young players that do come through, they're coming from overseas or from other parts of the country, but they've been there since they was like 14, 15 maybe, or 16. Yeah. And in fact, you know, to all intents and purposes, they're probably local lads, or they might see themselves as being local lads because... Yeah, so I mean, I don't think you necessarily have to apply that label to someone who was born in the area.
And probably at that age as well, is that the lure of London probably isn't going to be as great as moving thousands of miles away from home to play football. You could be pretty much anywhere, really.
I think as a young player,
you're
probably, if you're doing it right, your focus is going to be on the facilities and the training and the reputation of the club, at being able to produce top talent and give them the chance and bring them through. So one of the reasons why Dortmund signed these great young players is because they've got that reputation. And clubs like Sunderland, they need to be able to ape that. They need to be able to demonstrate to parents and agents of talented youngsters, you'll get a good education here, you'll learn how to play football, you'll be brought through, you'll be given your chance to play. And then when the time comes, we'll flog you on to Manchester United and or Real Madrid or Barcelona, and you'll get the chance. And I think that you could argue that by offering them... Well, actually, you know, I would argue the opposite. I would argue that it doesn't matter where you're located. What's important is, what are the facilities like? Yeah. And in some instances, parents and agents might say, okay, all right, there's not much going on up here, but that's no bad thing for my young boy, who could be a bit of a tearaway at times, and maybe this would be a good thing. It's the senior players you're trying to sign, and you're trying to offer them, you know, they've settled down, they've got family, you know, they've got some money, and you are trying to offer them perhaps a bit of a lifestyle to accompany it. And yes, as you alluded to earlier, that can be a problem.
Yeah.
I would imagine with Sunderland, but I mean, that's being quite unkind. I've never been to Sunderland, and I'm sure it's a lovely place with lovely people. But I note with interest that you don't live there anymore.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't lived there for nearly 20 years.
It has a thriving Chinese community there.
Is that right? That amazes you, despite the fact, perhaps because.
Sunderland have always struggled to recruit players in. And I think that if Newcastle hadn't been bringing in people like Alan Shearer, and they had a bit of a help with that because he was from the area.
Yeah, he wanted to go, didn't he?
He wanted to go there. So, and I think there's still probably still an effect from that.
They did have that period, didn't they, at the end of the 80s and beginning of the 90s when they were actively buying up.
But Keegan just brought him in.
Yeah. If you were Geordie, then you were going to go back to
the chance to play for Keegan. And they brought Beardsley back, didn't they?
Which is a great
move for them.
Yeah.
And they were also able to sign top international players as well, to varying degrees of success.
Mm.
And that was so. I mean, it can be done. I don't know whether or not maybe Newcastle is perhaps a different place in character. But I think that what you should be doing is you should be looking at the strengths of your community and playing to those strengths, rather than just looking at the fact that looking at its weaknesses and then thinking, well, maybe it would be better if we all just like decamped.
Mm.
You know, the strengths of Sunderland is that you've probably got lots and lots of real estate that you can work on and develop and invest in and build a footballing infrastructure to bring in players from all over. You know, not just in the local area, but from all over, and make them part of that squad. And I look at clubs like Sunderland, and I think that this is a club that, you know, I look at Dortmund, and I think that there are similarities.
Yeah.
They are industrial towns. There's not much there going on there by comparison to nearby cities like Dusseldorf or like Cologne to attract them, and yet Cologne are a mid-table Bundesliga side and Dusseldorf are a second division side. Dortmund have built this model which has proved to be incredibly successful.
Mm.
If Sunderland could do half of that, they would easily and comfortably be a Premier League side and with a team to be proud of, you know, playing in the area. So
I wonder as much as anything as well, though, if you're a younger player, even if you're a local young player, at Palace, if you're a 16, 17-year-old, you're probably playing in a group with a group of guys, perhaps there's a squad of about 18 of you or something like that. Likelihood is only one of you is going to be taken on just to go into the reserves, not even make it through. So most of them are going to fall out of that level of football. In London, there's plenty of other options.
You can go
down the leagues and not have to go too far. And then you can go into non-league, and that's a reasonably high level. We're looking at a team right now, and they've got players who have played for professional clubs.
They have indeed. And may yet again, by their
what happens when you fall through the net at Sunderland? How far do you have to go to get a game? Because the non-league in the Northeast is almost non-existent. I mean, it goes straight to step five, which is one below what Whiteleaf play at. There's four below what Sutton are playing at.
Yeah,
and when the clubs get to the top of that, they invariably they turn down a promotion. You get clubs that don't make a go for it. I think Spennymoor, I think, were the latest ones to go there, but they have to go so far to play their opponents.
Well, the Northern League is strong, but it's low down, and as you say, they won't take the step up because of the expense of broadening their horizons.
And probably because it's got a rich talent base to pull from. They often win the FA Vars because, you know, they're not going up.
Right.
They've imposed their own ceiling there.
Sure. But, you know, I mean, it's a relatively small country and despite the best efforts of the people who run it, you know, it has a transportation system.
Yeah.
You know, these guys can move.
Yeah.
If these kids can move, if they don't make it. and they can chance around. But I agree, I suppose it's possible that it might be easier if there were for other clubs in their local area. But I think that I would like to think that a determined youngster who was willing to travel and to relocate, and surely as a footballer from a very early age, that what you're told is, look, you'll have to move. You'll have to live somewhere where you don't live now.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're lucky, you'll start your career at your home club.
Yeah.
But actually, most kids don't.
Yeah.
They end up having to move somewhere else. And if you're doing really well, you'll be required to move somewhere else unless you're from Manchester or Liverpool or London, I suppose.
Well, you look at Shearer, didn't he end up going to Southampton?
So it's
completely at the end of the country to get his training.
And kids move even further than that. They move they move entire continents in order to get their football education and to have a chance. So I don't know whether or not that would necessarily hold up as a reason for relocating.
Mm.
It's because the snowflakes, you know, don't want to move away from home.
Well, who was the Oxford player? Back in
Joe Beacham.
Joe Beacham, that's it. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. I was thinking about Joe Beacham just the other day. I couldn't tell you why, but I was.
But West Ham, wasn't it?
It was West Ham.
West Ham, they paid a million for him, didn't they?
They paid a lot of money for him, and he just couldn't. He just didn't like it.
Didn't want to leave Oxford, did he?
I mean, Lucas Podolski was when he went to Bayern Munich, and there were all his time there was talk that he was homesick and he just wanted to go back. Kevin Grosskreutz, when he moved to Galatasaray, would basically spend all of his spare time with his mates back in Dortmund.
Mm. Yeah,
I mean it does happen. Of course it happens,
It does.
But I would argue that I think that is not really a state of mind you want to encourage in a professional footballer.
Mm.
Well, we had that recently with Craig. Was it Craig Gardner? He went back to I think West Brom.
Right,
because he was homesick for the Midlands.
Yeah,
which you wouldn't think. I mean, there's lots of lovely places in the Midlands. Don't get me wrong, but you'd think that, you know, there's lots of provincial places around there. He's moved up to Sunderland, quite provincial. But then we had the same issues, and there may have been other factors in these. But Yunus Kabul, and from Newcastle had Gavin Peacock, I think, who wanted to come back down here as well. I think there were other factors there, but they didn't feel sufficiently comfortable enough to stay in the northeast.
Who did Robbie Savage leave because he said he was homesick? And there was a big brouhaha about it, and he said he was homesick, and he went to Blackburn. Well, everyone went, come off it, mate. I can't remember what it was. I mean,
fairness, we'll have to look that up.
Robbie Savage is the kind of guy you object to, whatever he does. But I mean, I'm sure I remember it anyway. Of course, the current Bournemouth manager, Eddie Howe.
Yeah,
he went to Burnley from Bournemouth, and he was back within weeks. For personal reasons, but I mean, I'm sure that wouldn't be a barrier for him moving away. But you know, Poole Harbour is a lovely place.
Well, of course,
you ask Harry Redknapp
famously
said, "I'll do the Newcastle job, but you got to fly me up there from Poole Harbour."
Yeah. Well, he lives in sandbags, doesn't he? Yeah. So he's not going to want to move.
No, well, fair enough. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah. So I think that's the thing. I think because there's so much money in football now, I think it is easy just to think that they're all money grabbing, success hungry mercenaries, really, for want of a better word.
Mm.
But really, when it comes down to it, they're just taking the money that's being chucked at them, isn't they? Really,
well, I'm sure some of them are.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean,
no doubt.
But I mean, they're different people, and so some of them are motivated by different things. Of course, totally.
Whether we think it's ethical or right, or you become more of a business than you are a football club, and this is the game that we're in. Obviously on the pitch, you know, the wider money oriented TV rights and all of the good stuff that comes with that, it might be directing this behaviour, and this may be something that might sound silly today, but you know, tomorrow it might be something that's quite normal.
What do we think is the motivation behind the original story? What's your gut feeling about it? Why has this come up? Why is this here? Why are we talking about it?
I don't know. I mean, the Sunderland are supposedly for sale. I think Alan Nixon, or certainly one of his colleagues at the Sun, uncovered the story about the brochure that was produced for Ellis Short to hawk Sunderland around to other billionaires. So I don't know whether it's a kind of they're just getting in while they know potentially that there could be something coming on in terms of the sale. I don't know. It's more than likely that the transfer window's shut and there's nothing else to talk about, and maybe Rooney's not going to go to China. I don't know. Filling column inches more than likely.
What about you, Terry?
I think it's definitely column inches, but yeah, it's possible that they might be hoisting a flag, so to speak, just to see, just to gauge the reaction. I'm not sure whether or not that it has garnered any kind of reaction. But I think Jan's speculation is entirely plausible, that he's thinking that maybe people will be more interested, particularly perhaps overseas investors. Maybe, like, you know, when you're in the United States being a huge country, so you'll have like big NFL franchises, and I imagine in some instances those franchises, those clubs are set up some distance away from their stadiums, and so the idea of having a similar arrangement with a Premier League football club would not be foreign to an overseas investor in the way that it seems foreign to us. You know, maybe that could be it. Maybe he was just gauging opinion.
Yeah, and of course, if you have got a very wealthy billionaire investor, then they may want to just hang around in their Chelsea flat rather than have a place up in some god-awful place like Sunderland.
I mean, I sincerely hope it might well be that what's happened is that there's been a meeting, like you said, Jan, there's been a meeting. They've all thought, well, what can we do? They've done a bit of blue sky. They've got the old whiteboard out and they've come up with some harebrained schemes, and this is one of them. And someone's just maybe like leaked it out to Alan Nixon, and he thought, well, here's a bit of fun. You know, I'll stick this up there. And in fairness, there is no harm necessarily in it. You know, I mean, and that's as far as it goes. But I do think that it could foreshadow the future of club football in, you know, the kind of European, North American sort of, you know, landscape. There could be more clubs who'll be thinking, we don't necessarily have to be based in the community with which we start. There's no rule that says we have to be based in Sunderland.
Yeah.
So we could go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, clubs go winter warm training.
Yeah.
I'll start again. Clubs go Clubs go warm winter training in Dubai and other places regularly. And the club essentially moves the training camp, goes out there, and to all intents and purposes, they're in an entirely different country for a week, maybe even 2 weeks sometimes. I mean, in Germany, they go away for 2-3 weeks at a time during the winter break. Guardiola took his team off quite recently to Dubai. And essentially, you're relocating, you know, a big part of that club to somewhere else, albeit temporarily. The main thing is you're coming back.
Yeah. But it's great for marketing as well, though, isn't it?
It is great for marketing. And it's great if you're not worried about working or serving your community. If you're Manchester City, Manchester United, you live in a massive metropolitan area, and it makes complete sense to be grounded in that area for commercial reasons as well as the nice, benevolent, you know, traditional reasons.
But we've already seen with New York City that you've got clubs there and Manchester City, you've got clubs there that are part of a group now, aren't they? So, like you're saying with Red Bull, you know, the same thing could go on there, couldn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, maybe in the future that's what we'll see. We'll see. You know, Manchester City or City, will be a group. So Manchester, Melbourne, New York City, you know, becoming increasingly a more integrated unit, and then maybe having a headquarters somewhere entirely different. Where in off season or in downtime maybe they'll all relocate to Dubai and set up their own. Maybe they've already done that, set up their own camp permanently there, and so that's where we are. And I can certainly see clubs doing that, and there may well be fine sporting reasons to do that, but I think there also might well be consequences in terms of a club's link to its local community, which are not always easy to foresee.
One thing is for certain, I'm sure it attracted a lot of interest on social media amongst Sunderland fans, and of course it probably got a lot of clicks for the Sun's website, which in many respects leads you to think that this isn't going to be the last time we see stories like this cropping up. Now, the years before we started this podcast, back in the mid-2000s, Terry started a football satire website. Nowadays, it would be a football fake news site.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. But back then, we called it satire and not fake news. Yeah,
yeah. This is, we're living in a world where we can't really satire. Can you really?
You literally couldn't make it, up.
Yeah. Well, some people could.
Yeah.
But it's actually going out there as proper news now. And really, I think that's probably where we've got to tie things up before we say anything that's just completely untrue.
Indeed, yeah. Like Sutton have beaten Arsenal. Yeah. I can't believe Sutton beat Arsenal. I cannot believe it. Can you believe that?
I can't believe it.
We had that 2-0 win at lead as well. Oh, that last minute whiz hat trick. God dear. Damn you, Sunbet. Damn you to Hades. If you want to send in some of your own fake news or your reaction to Sunderland moving down south, please do so through the regular channels. Instagram.
The gram.
Instagram. Send us a picture or something.
Send us a picture. Why don't you do that? Yeah.
What, send us your own artwork?
Like the gallery.
Yeah, we can't return any of your works.
No one's going to get that joke.
One for the kids, that one. Yeah, one for the teenagers.
I'll just play the gallery music for a minute, just on the end of the podcast. Say, like, here's the pictures you sent in this week.
when we say send us a picture, we mean football related. Yeah, we don't mean send us a picture.
Oh God, no. But yes, as I said, that's all we've got time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry Cullen, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @SoundOfFootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.